Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you in my name. I can safely say most of us have experienced that in the LGBT community over and over and over again. And for the last 8 months, I think, I have been absolutely consumed with the vote on the marriage canon. Consumed to the point that sometimes it would paralyze my ability to do anything else. I would be going to clergy conferences. All my clergy friends were here tonight and I asked to come tonight. I was emotional. I could not understand why, for the longest time, it was bothering me so much. Most of you know me. Most of you know that I'm married and I've had my marriage blessed and I'm ordained and I should be happy and joyful and all this. And people telling me, you know, you'd be happy and joyful. You should be thrilled. And I am. And yet, constantly, this debate consumes me. And I was speaking to my ex-partner, who is a very good friend of mine. We were together for 13 years. We met when I was 24 and he was 22. And we talked about pride, and we talked about what it was like back in the 90s. And we sort of came to a realization that in those days when Bruce and I would go to Pride, it was just, we'd go to Toronto, we both worked in churches. So, you know, I worked for the Roman Catholic Episcopal Corporation for 25 years. And I, of course, would go to Toronto for Pride, and the first thing we'd do is run from the cameras. There'd be TV cameras, there'd be newspaper, and we're like, oh no, there's another one, move, hide. But it was still fun. It was about fun. And we were together. We had our house. We had our dogs. We had everything. And we didn't seem to be bothered by the notion that we weren't married. And I couldn't figure it out. And then I realized there's a human being that made all the difference in our lives. In 1991, I met a priest in Orillia, an Anglican priest by the name of the Reverend Galt Courtright. And he actually hired my ex-partner as a music director, and he still believed that he was the one that brought us together. He told Bruce, you should call this guy, and he'll tell you what it's like to be a, and the next thing you know, we were together. He left Orillia in 92, and he moved back to Toronto. Galt was from a wealthy family in Toronto, Anglican priest, deaf, quite small, and he had AIDS. And I remember when Bruce was going to school in Toronto, Galt would call and say, please have Bruce call me and we'll go out for dinner. Galt helped Bruce come out of the closet at lightning speed. He was amazing. He was an amazing mentor, both musically and spiritually. And he loved his church. Make no mistake, Galt believed in his church deeply. And he spent the last years of his life as, I think, an associate, was it, Ansley, at Church of the Redeemer. It was one of the reasons I asked Ansley to preside tonight, was because she knew Galt when she was rector of Church of the Redeemer. So he helped Bruce come out of the closet. We would go to Toronto on Sunday nights, and we would go to what was called Christos MCC, which was just a cloak and dagger word for every gay organist and clergy in the city of Toronto who got together in one location on a Sunday evening to worship together. And there was a lot of us. There I actually got to hear Sylvia Dunstan, a priest in the, well, a minister in the United Church, but I believe she was a priest in the Church of God, who was ordained long before it was fashionable to have women ordained or to be openly gay in the church. She wrote the last hymn tonight, and I always think of her when I get to Pride, because she was a great hymn writer and a great poet, and taken away much too early from us. She was only 37 when she died of breast cancer. In 1996, Bruce and I had to go to Galt's funeral at Church of the Redeemer in Toronto. It was a very powerful moment in both of our lives. Here was our friend, sitting in a church where Ansley was the presider. Across from Ansley was the Archbishop of Toronto, then Terence Finlay. Sitting in the congregation in the pew directly across from us was Jim Ferry, who had been defrocked as an Anglican priest for being openly gay by Terence Finlay, who was sitting up there. And I had such great admiration for Ansley because she was presiding over a funeral of a person who died of AIDS, with the bishop across from her, and this priest who'd been sent free from the church for being gay. And I thought, to maneuver around all this, all this emotion, all this anxiety, all this anger. This was really the way Galt would have wanted it. He would have been happy. A couple of years later, we went to another funeral. This was the funeral of the partner of another priest who had been, they'd been together 25 years, Reverend Canon Glenn Pritchard. And again, I remember sitting in the congregation and thinking about the tension in the room, the tension. It was so apparent until there was no word mentioned that this was a priest sitting here in the first pew and this was a priest's partner in the casket. There was not even a mention of it in the sermon and nothing until the rector walked over and handed a thurible to Glenn and asked him to incense the casket at the end. And of course, that was another powerful moment. So I fast forward to I get married, I get my marriage blessed, and I'm settling down here in Victoria. And then last year, I was invited to dinner at a friend's house. I have permission to speak about this. Our friends Sandra Hansel-Drover and John, both Anglican priests. And their 13-year-old son, Peter, comes up to the table and says, "Mom, can I tell them? Mom, can I tell them?" I thought, "Oh, tell us what? What are you going to tell us?" And so he turned and he says, "Well, the reason I don't have a girlfriend, Patrick, is because I'm gay." I thought, "Oh my God, you're 13 years old. You're 13 years old, and at the dinner table at your mom and dad's house, you're telling me, you're coming out to my partner and I." And I nearly fell off my chair because I thought, wow, holy smokes, that's a long way from 1991, 93 or 96, when I'm sitting in these places and we can't speak about it, and we're debating it. And I think the thing that I learned is that what's bothering me is the fact that now I'm 54 years old, for the last 40 years, my sexual orientation has been dragged across the floors of synods, has been debated in the newspaper, has been debated in parliament, and I'm exhausted. I'm tired of it. I don't want to hear about my private life anymore. A, it's really nobody's business, and B, there's so many more important things in the world to think about. The fact that 8 months of my life has been consumed by this and I have not been able to do the work that I've been ordained to do because I'm so obsessed with what's going to happen next week. And so I have to say to myself now, I have come this far. We have come this far. I will not be happy if the canon doesn't pass. That's a given. But I know what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to leave my church. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to stop fighting. I'm not going to believe that there are groups of people who have some unreasonable ill against me as a human being that are going to control my faith. They will not control my faith. I won't allow that to happen. Because for people like Galt, who didn't get to see it, like Glenn, who didn't get to see it, like Sylvia, like so many of my friends who died in the 90s, who didn't get to see this day, I'm going to keep going. I will keep going. And I think we all have to. We can be upset, and we can lament, and we can be really hurt by what happened. But God is on our side, and I believe that. And I know that we're going to get to the other side of this. And why? Well, because of today, I looked behind me in that parade, and I saw that wall of people coming up the street, all from our church, and I thought, holy smokes, look at all these people. So you know what? This is the day. This is the day that God has made, and I will rejoice and be glad in it. Amen.